Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
You know, Peter Welch, one of the things that you cover so much stuff, agriculture, this, that, defense, but I wanted to talk to you and your role is on the Subcommittee on National Security, Homeland Defense, and Foreign Operations. And I suspect your effort to prevent high-powered missile launchers from being given to the Syrian opposition has some background.
Well, I do. You know, there's just an ongoing tragedy in Syria. The Assad government is just starving out. It's using starvation and indiscriminate bombing, some of these barrel bombs, to try to win the war. And if there were a way that we could safely help, I think all of us would want to do it. But it's chaos on the ground, including on the opposition side. You know, some of the elements that are fighting Assad the most vigorously are al-Qaeda-related, and they're fighting amongst themselves. So it's not as though if you turned over any weapon system, you could have confidence that, quote, the good guys that we wanted to support would end up with it. It could go into hands of people whose goal would be to kill us. Or to take down a commercial airliner, if that's what they could do, because it would be so threatening to the West. And these man pads are very effective anti-aircraft, easily used weapon systems. And the pitch that the effort of the Syrian opposition to get these is to, they obviously say is to shoot down the Assad planes. But we have no way of having any confidence that once these are turned over to folks in Syria, that they'll stay in the hands of people we trust. So then they could be turned on commercial airliners very, very easily. So as much as we have the desire to help, on a practical level, turning over anti-aircraft weapons that could bring down commercial airliners, I think this is an extremely dangerous decision and an unwise one.
Well, Congressman Peter Welch, I wanted to ask you something. I'm glad I don't have your job because this is a difficult answer. But you raise these considerations, which I've had for a long time, about watch out who you support, because they may turn out to be Osama bin Laden down the line. Are we better off with the, quote, revolutionaries, or are we better off letting Assad? Now, I know neither of them are satisfactory. Assad stayed in power, but have you ever put your head in your hands and thought this thing through?
You know, we don't control the situation. That's the tragedy here, because it's extremely painful for any of us to be seeing the stories out of Syria. And by the way, I was at a Syrian refugee camp on the Turkish side of the border. I was literally on the Turkish-Syrian border. So you're seeing people and talking to people who are under the gun, who had to flee in order to save their lives. And many of these families that we met had husbands or brothers that were on the Syrian side of the border engaged in combat. And they'd come and go. And there, you could just see, the enormous anxiety those families had. You could see their destitution, everything that they owned they had to leave behind. They didn't know what their future was. And then we saw a lot of kids and adults who had wicked injuries as a result of the violence in Syria. So it makes you want to help any way that you can. The practical problem is, how can you help when the revolutionary elements are so divided, where they're fighting amongst one another, and where if you come in on one side, are you essentially setting up a situation where it could become worse, not better? So what can we do? I mean, I think anything on humanitarian aid, doing all we can to get aid into Syria for humanitarian aid and in the camps on the borders in Jordan and in Turkey. But the fact that this tragedy is unfolding does not empower us to be able to have a magic wand that's going to suddenly make it go away. Very, very hard.
Yeah, but again, I'm sorry to beat the dead horse, but don't we have to make an essential decision in each of these cases and also look at what's become of Afghanistan and Iraq and who some of the characters are who are on the stage there, don't we have to assess whether we have any business at all in this?
Well, the president did make the decision. You know, he really did. There was there's an enormous lobby here in Congress to get involved in a much more active and on-the-ground military kind of way. I mean, Senator McCain is one of the leading proponents of much more military activity by the United States in the Syrian conflict. So there's pressure on the president from elements like Senator McCain. But the president, basically, I think for reasons that you mentioned, how did it work out in Afghanistan? How did it work out in Iraq? Has, I think, a healthy respect for the limits of military power and our ability to control what is essentially a domestic civil war that's ongoing in that country. So he's exercised enormous restraint, and I'm sure that's very painful for him to exercise that restraint. But I think he's come to the judgment that the military involvement would not guarantee the outcome that we would theoretically desire.
Let me talk to you about this very scary story about the rise of heroin in Vermont. What can you tell us about that? I mean, it's not only in Vermont. It's obviously in New York, too, and other places. But what can be done?
Well, first of all, I'm pretty proud of Vermont, and it's our law enforcement people who have been the leaders in pointing out the obvious, and that is you can't arrest your way out of this. And I think the governor did a great thing when he devoted his entire state of the state address, Governor Shumlin, to this problem, where it's affecting our kids, it's affecting adults. And I've been, by the way, to a methadone clinic where there's a lot of adults, some of whom got hooked on this when they got pain relief, when they got, like, OxyContin. They had some prescribed medications and they couldn't get off. And they come in and they get the medication and then they go to work. So we want to have steps here that are going to address it, face it, acknowledge it, and try to deal with it as best we can. So that means Vermont faced up to it. And what was originally a little apprehension in Vermont that the governor was so direct about this, that it brought us all this attention, people were a little nervous that it would hurt our reputation. But as it turns out, when I got back to Congress, one member after another came up and spoke to me and said, you know, Peter, we have the same situation in our state, in our district. So this is pretty widespread, and you're seeing the reports now, the New York Times talking about all the heroin that goes to New York and then gets distributed all over the Eastern Seaboard. So we've got a distribution issue, which is law enforcement, but then we've got a health issue that really is affecting our kids.
Okay, and so specifically, what do we do?
Well, what Vermont's doing, it's first of all, it's all in. You know, you acknowledge the problem. Secondly, you have to have some treatment programs so that folks who want to deal with this can. Third, I think by making it public, you're creating space for not just our mental health workers, but our parents to realize that if somebody they know, their child, their brother, their sister, is involved, that, hey, we can get help and we're going to try to deal with this as an illness. The dealers, obviously, we're going to throw the book at them. But our families, our kids, the ones that are the future of our communities, we want to find ways to help them.
When I studied this as a graduate student, it was so interesting because I remember the first methadone clinics and but, you know, they tried it both ways. Lindsay and Rockefeller, first they tried, as you said before, to treat everybody, and they set up all kinds of clinics. They even competed for who would buy this Queen Mary and put all the addicts, you know, on the Queen Mary for treatment. That didn't work out. But then when that didn't work, Rockefeller, of course, did the infamous Rockefeller drug laws in which he arrested everybody.
Right.
And were in jail for years until very recently. So I don't know what the answer is.
You know, the reality is there's not an easy answer. Addictions are very powerful. You know, tobacco, drugs. It's really, really tough. And the individual ultimately has to internally find a way to get over that addiction. And there's steps that can be taken that will help people who are willing to help themselves. But what our law enforcement folks are pointing out is that the notion that you can arrest your way out of this problem, that that becomes the solution, arresting everybody who's an addicted person using the drugs is not going to be successful. So what the police say, and like our mayor say, is that it has to be a comprehensive approach, that it does provide treatment, but also really tries to rebuild neighborhoods. You know, I was in Rutland the other day, and we were with the Secretary of Energy at a home in a lower-income neighborhood where they were doing very significant energy retrofit, and where it was just a sign in that neighborhood that things were looking up. And they had a big block party where the chief of police came down and spent about 3 hours. And it was like a neighborhood renewal event where, and it was right within sight of where folks had been months earlier dealing drugs. And it was people there taking back their neighborhood. It was a coordinated effort with the police chief, with some folks who invested in their home to make it look new and nice. So it's a whole comprehensive approach to rebuilding neighborhoods.
Peter Welch, we love having you on. You're a terrific thinker. Peter Welch is, of course, Congressman-at-Large in office since 2007 in Vermont, a Democrat. Thank you so much for being with us. When we come back the next time, let's start with immigration reform.
Thank you.